next stop on this train will be...
It's up to you, New York.
Swung on and hit in the air. The deep center. Fetch back. Away back. Yeah. She is gone.
This is 161st Street, Yankee Stadium.
Saying, oh, we're not worried about the AL East is still up for grabs. Like, that's just not true. Like,
yeah, I went to school with a bunch of my boys that I was and I'm still really good friends with. They're all from, for some reason, like the New York Boston, you gravitate to each other.
Yeah,
and so like a lot of my really good friends are actually from Boston, so that rivalry was going back and forth for a long time.
Yeah,
the late 90s, early 2000s were great because I was with them most of the time, and I was completely obnoxious in their face. and then when everybody moved that's on with life, that's when it started. You know, the Red Sox started winning, so at least I had some separation.
Yeah, see, we didn't really have that as much. We just graduated college last year.
Okay,
so we all just moved out to the city. But while we were in college, obviously they've had how many super? They won all three Super Bowls, didn't, or Wait, went to me. All three. And I'm an Eagles fan too. Don't ask how that happened, but at least I had that one Super Bowl where we beat them. So yeah. Around all of our friends, but
I'm a beaten Jets fan, man. So I just don't give up.
Hey, there we go.
So
let's go.
I'm just they've beat me so far down that, you know, like it's impossible to get optimistic at this point.
Yeah, it's like I barely watched NFL this season.
Yeah, me too.
It's
sad.
You lose motivation to actually watch anything.
You know what pisses me off is that, like, I invest so much of my heart and soul into that team for so long, and then they just do nothing but fuck it up, like, every year. And I feel like they don't try sometimes. Like, I feel like the ownership, like, the new, the brother, what's his name? Johnson & Johnson.
Oh, yeah.
This Johnson is a complete dipshit. Like, I can't handle him, and I don't believe anything he says. I don't trust him. Like, I feel like he's just doing this because it's fun and, like, it's a little toy. So like,
well, isn't that guy from, or it's based off of the guy from the investing show or that big show on HBO?
Oh, Ballers?
No.
No.
I don't know, but like who it's based off of, the like, bigwig Wall Street guy back in the day. Apparently, he's trying to buy the Jets, or they did a deal. Yeah, so yeah, they did
Cohen,
it like in a couple of years from now, it comes into place, but. Maybe that'll help.
That's the Mets. He's buying the Mets.
Oh, yeah, and that's what I meant. Yeah, the Mets. The Will Ponzi. Yeah,
there's the other problem with the Jets. Everybody fucking lumps us in with the Mets.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, most people are Jets and Mets fans, so I don't know.
It's like, oh, you're miserable? You got to be a Jets fan and a Mets fan.
I don't get why people will do that to themselves. At least, like, even I'll allow the bandwagon. Like, you can come over, at least be an honorary Yankees fan. Just give yourself a little bit of happiness.
Yeah.
Cool. Crazy. Well, I mean, like, again, appreciate you so much coming on, but I'd love to, like, learn a little bit more about, like, how you guys got started with Bronx Pinstripes and, you know, what was just the initial factor of you guys actually getting started and, like, how have you guys really, like, escalated through this growth? It's amazing. You guys are now, like, the number one Yankees podcast in the world.
So Bronx Pinstripes started when I was... You know, it was like 10 years ago, and it was really just me just trying to get a creative void to like talk Yankees baseball and write a little bit. And so it started out as a blog and like me fucking around in like in Photoshop and just kind of learning Photoshop kind of with, you know, with Yankees content. And I'll tell you the reason I started it is because there weren't very many websites out there. Like River Avenue Blues and like a bunch of those sites were out there, but there was a site called, it was called NYY News. I don't know if you even remember it, but it's still there, I think. But it's like a forum. It's like a really long form, like with a whole bunch of mega threads. And I fucking hate the mega threads. So it was like Brett Gardner would be a thread, right? And it would, you couldn't find anything in it because it would be everything about Brett Gardner for like 10 years of content. And it was just, I don't know, it was an annoying way to talk with other Yankees fans. So I just decided, I was like, let's do this and see what happens. And I started on Twitter and just started like just talking with people on Twitter and then following other Yankee fans. That's kind of how it started. It's probably why we have so many followers on Twitter, is because in the beginning, the way I grew is I just followed a bunch of Yankees fans.
Yeah, that's what we're doing now.
Yeah. And then I put a kind of a cat call out for people who wanted to write. and Andrew, my co-host, who was the first guy I brought on. So he was writing, and then, you know, the both of us were writing and all that. And I slowly stopped writing as much, and we brought on more writers. And long story short, it's just kind of evolved from there, just being a hobby. And we've just kind of like added to it as the years have gone on. We started the podcast 5 years ago now. And it was just us. And Feinstein was doing the Daily News show. That was the only other Yankee show out there right, at that point. And so we decided to do that. And then, yeah, just kind of progressed, man. Like events, we started doing events. That was something I've always wanted to do.
Yeah.
And then finally got to the point, because it was just, it's a lot of time. So, but finally got to that point where we're starting to grow that. And that's been fun, man. That's been one of my more fun points of Bronx Pinstripes, because you get to hang out with more people. And it's just like the in real life stuff is good for me.
Yeah. You start to like build that community, which is awesome.
Yeah. That was the whole reason why we wanted to start that. We wanted to do like a Yankees group chat too for everybody, just like I don't even know, like a Facebook group or something, so people can just like make their own posts and threads or whatever you want to call it. But I mean, we actually wanted to come to one of the Bronx Pinstripes events, but a couple of our friends just couldn't make it.
Yeah.
But it looks like a lot of fun. You guys go. We actually met you guys briefly at Billy's when we were up at the top bar just before one of the playoff games. Obviously,
this
don't
year?
Remember that. Yeah, this year.
Yeah, but I kind of do. Now that I'm seeing your faces again, I kind of remember
it. Yeah, it was just all of you guys.
Was it before or after the game? That's a big difference.
Before the game. But we just brushed past and went to the back bar. But yeah, it was cool. But that's pretty much what we're trying to do. We wanted to do like all the events and stuff eventually. Yeah.
Yeah.
We actually did something that was pretty fun on the last episode. We had a couple of our friends here too, and did the all-time Yankees draft, because it was like the end of the decade. And there's nothing really going on in the offseason, so we thought it would be fun. So we did like a snake draft fantasy style, and a lot of people didn't even understand that either. So we posted like the final results with the swipe of all four of our teams, and everyone was like, "Oh my God, you don't have Babe Ruth on your team." I was like, "Well, he's on that team." Like, they're like, "If you have like DD over Jeter, you should just, I'm blocking you right now." I was like,
because they thought it was one team.
And like, yeah, and I literally, I had to edit it and put it in all caps. Like, this is a fantasy draft. Like,
yeah. We did that a couple of years ago. Yeah, we did that a couple of years ago, actually. It's fun. It's fun to do. It's when you start getting down to it, some people start picking some crazy shit. I'm like, what are we doing here?
Yeah, Damon. That was Damon. Damon started off hot with Robbie Cano, which is not a terrible pick, but number one
pick?
That's kind of crazy.
Listen, my whole thing was, you know, you got to think about the snake draft, and you got to think about the scarce positions. You know, okay. I'm not going to pick an outfielder first, because Yankees are stacked all time with outfielders.
All right, before I listen to any further, who was on the board?
Everybody.
Yeah.
He like, picked it.
Was,
I know.
What pick was this?
One.
What the fuck?
I know. That's what we and you're not even gonna believe the other one. There's somebody who shouldn't have been picked.
You guys have an hour to prepare.
If it's a snake draft, you're not picking for a long time, so you gotta go top heavy.
I know.
Have to really hit with this pick.
And I came back from work. I wasn't really focusing. We kind of jumped into it. And Robbie Cano was one of my favorite players ever, so it was a little bit favored that way.
He also took Randy Johnson, which is the worst pick in the world.
We're not talking about that.
He obviously came in last when we did the vote, but I mean, yours truly won.
Whatever.
But he got Randy Johnson like the fourth round. And we're like, what?
Randy Johnson was not a good Yankee.
He was 39, age 39 and 40, had a 5 ERA. Like, yeah. Last years of his career.
That experiment didn't work out too well.
No. But I mean, it went fun, though. Like, we all just, it was like an hour and a half of just picking all the time. Just,
it was like
some were bad
too.
Picks, some were good. It was fun. A controversial one was Ricky Henderson. I don't know how you guys feel. I mean, everybody thinks he's in A, but I mean, we did have him in his prime. So
I got a Ricky Henderson starting lineup behind me. Ricky Henderson's the New York Yankee.
Yeah, I had him in. What round was that? Like midway through? I think it was a steal. But
yeah.
Anyway, yeah.
Hey, no pun intended, baby. Ricky Henderson was literally one of the greatest. Like if I when I used to coach Little League, I would show like these kids are like, who the hell is this guy? But if you watch his mechanics, like running from first base to second base on a steal after a lead, it's beautiful. It's a beautiful thing, because he starts so low And that dude stays low, 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 low. And like he barely even raises up at all. He's just a rocket all the way through. Fun to watch.
I saw a cool stat. It was like, if somebody played for the next 20 years and stole 50 bags every single year, they still wouldn't catch up to Ricky Henderson.
Yeah. No, it's true, man. I mean, he was so good.
What was the most he stole in 1 year? Like 70-something?
I don't know the top number, but it was a lot. Yeah, that,
I don't remember. More than anybody. Than
average. Definitely more than average.
Got to pay attention to who's going to start challenging us. So with the Nolan Arenado, he's apparently going to be traded 50-50 this season. So with him, obviously, I don't think we're going to get Nolan Arenado, nor do we really need him. But with that news, like, where do you guys think he's going to go, and what does that mean for us as a team too?
I mean, I don't think it has any bearing on what the Yankees do or how the Yankees do anything, honestly, or even go about their team. If that guy gets traded, it's going to be to a team that can obviously absorb the massive salary, right? So you're looking at like the Dodgers, and the Dodgers not going to be the Angels. The Angels could absorb, but they just got Rendon, so you need a fit there as well. And I mean, the Dodgers probably would be the team, and I would think the only team that could do that, that could pull off a deal like that.
Well, that's why I ask, because I think that's the only team. Like, if you were to take him, Betts, or Lindor, the other three that are like trade assets right now that are being talked about, and put them on just the Dodgers, that's the only team that would like make me worried about being like the favorites going in. I mean, it's baseball, so anything can happen, but you know, I think if one of those three, any which one, goes on the Dodgers, that's definitely cause for concern. So,
yeah, I don't get too wrapped up on what's going on in the National League just because, like you said, it's such a crapshoot and you don't know who the hell. I mean, look what the Nationals did there, right? Exactly. Like, nobody was expecting that. But I don't know. Like, if they get there and they're good, then that's cool. We'll see you in the World Series.
Yeah, or they'll choke like they have been for the past couple of years.
So they're actually much. They're not. They lost Ryu. Like, that's a big deal. I mean, he was a very good pitcher for them. So,
yeah. I mean, he's on the Blue Jays now. The Blue Jays are actually kind of like, they're actually young and talented. So now they add Ryu. But I mean,
they're gonna be a pain in the ass. That's what they're gonna be.
Yeah, I think they could get like around the Rays, and then who knows what the Red Sox are gonna do if they get rid of Betts. Then I think there might be below them even. I don't know.
I mean, they have a lot of good young talent, obviously, on the offensive side. So I think their pitching is the one area, and by adding a guy like Ryu, it just gives them some stability every fifth day. So they're going to be a pain in the ass. There's no doubt. Like that offense is going to be good.
Yeah. Another team that also could come out of the woodwork this year is, I mean, the White Sox look pretty fucking good too. Yeah. I mean, the White Sox, they added Keuchel, they added Moncada is apparently going to be a potential MVP this year, they're saying. But I mean, they got Grandal too.
Yeah. They definitely have young talent. They have prospects. Like that's what they're doing right now. They're building building within the farm, and then they're adding, you know, veteran pieces around it. So
yeah, with like they could be
filthy next year. You never like if these young guys come and they all start playing, and they live up to the hype of what their prospect status is, like they could be a very good team and dangerous. So if you could see them rise, kind of like the Braves. Rose like fast and quick and probably a year or two early. I mean, the Yankees did the same thing. Yankees rose a year or two early. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did.
Yeah, especially with the Lindor thing too, because that division is very winnable. And then if Lindor moves, then they're easily the favorites to win the division. So that's just an easy ticket to the playoffs.
Yeah, I mean, the Twins are still
the Twins too. I forgot about the Twins.
Piece in there, but I don't think they. You know, they've added some pieces, but they're not by any means like a juggernaut in the Central.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's talk a little about the Yankees now that we just took a little bit of dive around the league. So the Domingo Germán suspension just came out, and it was the 81 games retroactive because he just served some of it. Now 63 games. So I wanted to gauge what you guys thought that means for us or immediate reaction. Think it was fair. What do you guys think?
Go ahead, Damon.
it's tough to say because obviously we don't want him to be on the field.
Yeah, I know.
I'm not rooting for the guy if he's going to do like the domestic abuse stuff. Obviously, we don't stand for that. But
I think a big part of it is setting examples. And I think that's been a huge theme, especially in this day we live in right now. And whenever domestic abuse comes out, it's been taken very, very seriously. And I feel like this is a big, just like setting an example suspension, Especially because that CC's charity event, like, that's not a good look.
Yeah, he did it full blown public too. That was just...
But yeah, I don't know. I mean, obviously deserves a big suspension. You know, big setting example, and I don't think that, you know, it needs to happen. It needs to happen. That's all I'm trying to say.
Yeah. So, like, so the way that we approach this, obviously nobody advocates and supports anybody that is an abuser. Like, it's just bad. Yeah. Everybody knows that it's a bad thing to do. But separating it with baseball, because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about baseball on the field. And I think that's very, you know, you got to do that. If you're talking about baseball, you're talking about the Yankees, because it does impact them on the field. And it hurt them last year. It hurt them, like, him being stupid and being a bad guy hurt the New York Yankees on the field. That's what happened.
Yeah. We could have used him
in the playoffs. He would have been a piece that they would have absolutely used and could have been a swing piece. You don't know. But the fact that, like, yeah, there's a precedent, I think, for the suspensions. Like, he was there was another one I'm looking. Oh, yeah. Osuna had one that was very similar to that. I think his was a little bit or six games less than what Herman got. So there was a precedent set. And who knows what behind the scenes? Like, we don't know. We don't know what happened. Yankees probably know what happened. Baseball know what happened. Herman know what happened. Everybody involved knows what happened. So, you know, we don't make judgments on that because we don't know. We let them take care of that, and then we worry about the stuff on the field. Like, I feel like that's the best way to approach a situation like this as a fan. But he's a good pitcher, and he developed a lot last year, and he became a guy that the Yankees could really rely on, you know, whether it was in the starting rotation. Like, he stepped up when Seve went down. Like, he was the guy that got them over the bridge. He was a bridge guy. And, you know, if him not being on the field is obviously going to impact them. That being said, the Yankees have Jordan Montgomery coming up that is, you know, very possibly going to be the number five guy. He's going to be competing for that spot, obviously. And so, you know, if he can come back and rebound from his Tommy John and all reports indicate that he's healthy and ready to go, you know, that will help a bit. And then Herman will come back at some point in the middle of the season, and we'll see what happens there. Like, if the Yankees stay with him.
That's a good point. That's a good point, because I think a lot of people don't think about it as on the field, off the field. I think everybody thinks about it as one big thing. You know, it's like,
it is what it is. So, like, yeah, I feel like it goes without said that we don't support him and happened. Like,
yeah,
but it's at the same time, like, he's a baseball player on our team and he's still on the team. Like, if the Yankees dismissed him, then that's it. Like, that takes care of that. And I hope that he has, you know, is being contrite and doing all the things right to make himself a better dude. But that doesn't change the fact that, what he is on the baseball field. And like, I think as fans, as people who talk about the team on the field, as the New York Yankees on the field wearing the pinstripes, like, that hurts the team. Yeah, bottom line, of course. It does.
Yeah, I mean, I think he was a swing piece for the playoffs, because, I mean, we were using the bullpen so much. And then if it could be a long reliever too. And he comes in there whenever somebody gets pulled early, and then all of a sudden you can just get lengthened. And I mean, I think that could even win us the World Series, honestly, because if we get past the Astros, then who knows what happens against the Nationals. But anyway, but, I mean, when he comes back too, so now that we're past that, we know that he's going to be coming back. So when he comes back, I'm going to root for him, but, you know, obviously not the offensive field, but when he comes back, that's a lethal number five. Like, that, that's pretty significant to kite back after only 63 games too. So, I mean, I think that's scary for other teams, and it's cool because last year, something that everybody talked about being such a weakness and, like, middle of the pack, nothing special about our starting rotation. Although Yankee bias, I thought it was still pretty good, but I was never really worried. But now, in a snap of a finger, it becomes the possibly up for debate the best rotation in the league, up there with the Dodgers and the Nationals still, because they just brought back Strasburg. But it's just crazy to see that something so weak became literally one of the top strengths, not only on our team, but with MLB. So I just think that's really cool.
You add the best pitcher on the planet, and, you know, that helps.
Definitely
that
helps.
That certainly helps. You add you bring back a guy like Seve, who's going to, you know, hopefully be healthy for the entire season. Like, that's a guy that we saw in the first half of 2018 be the most dominant pitcher in baseball. He was filthy. And, you know, once we saw that, we got a little taste of what we think Seve could be as a number one type guy. So, you know, if he can get back to even three quarters of that, you know, that's a solid, very good number two guy. And then, you know, Paxton, again, I think there's a lot of potential in there. Like, the ceiling's high, I think, for the for the rotation. And I do think there's some depth now. Yes, you if Herman does come back in the middle of the season and that's a piece that they can rely on at some point, then yeah, you're adding more depth at that point. With Montgomery coming back from healthy, we got Davy Garcia. Who knows what he'll be if they keep him in the rotation in Scranton, or if he's going to be a potential bullpen piece later on. I think there's definitely some options that are around, and I think make us as fans and the Yankees feel good about their depth.
Yeah. So I know you mentioned that you think Montgomery would be the five. Is that who you'd pick as number five on opening day? Him or, I mean, obviously Hap in the conversation too, but you would go with him.
Well, I mean, spring training is going to tell, I think. I want to see what he looks like and how he's come back from surgery. But yeah, I mean, I think he's got a real opportunity for it. So you're looking at Cole, Seve, Tanaka, Paxton, and then you know, else. It's Montgomery, Hap. I mean, who knows?
Could do opener.
Yeah, I hate the opener, but the thing is like the beginning of the season, a lot of times they start off with, they could start off with more guys on the, getting spot starts as well. So I don't know. I think there's a lot of options. I think there's some good stuff. And even if Montgomery started in AAA, not the end of the world, because I do think Hap's going to rebound. I think that we saw bad J Hap at the beginning of last year. Yeah. But if you look at what his numbers were in the second half, actually he wasn't a bad pitcher. And I don't think fans don't realize how much better he was in the second half than he was in the first half. And we're talking about a number five guy. I'm not talking about J Hap being a number two or three guy. We're talking about a number five guy who can get through some innings. Like, that's what we need.
Yeah. And we were talking about that too. Like, J Hap was like low key pretty good. And whenever he would go out there, we'd be in the game at least. So he would never really blow up. He would eat up innings. And I mean, it's definitely not a bad number five to have. And if you said spring training, yeah, we'll find out who becomes that number five. And I honestly don't hate the opener. So I know a lot of people don't like it, but the opener every once in a while, I mean, Chad Green was, we were like, there was some stat before that we were like, undefeated 20-0 whenever Chad Green is the opener. So
okay, so here's what I hate about that stat is so bullshit. What does Chad Green have anything to do with the eight innings that he doesn't pitch?
He doesn't get the win. Yeah, I know.
No, it's not even that he doesn't get the win. He only dictates one the inning. First inning or two. Yeah, so like I understand the team is, but there's a lot more. Like, okay, so now we're saying that Nestor Cortez is the key puzzle because he was the guy that came in after him for a long time. So, let's throw like as many games with Nestor Cortez as possible. I don't know. It's just to me like there's way too many possible things that go wrong. You need more guys to pitch well on that given day, and to the chances are lower in my opinion. So,
yeah, no, I know. It was just a little something that they said it all the time. I remember Michael Kay and all of them just putting that graphic on the screen, like, oh, they're 20 something. Yeah, I know. Whenever it's like Chad Green is this
stat of the year,
and they're just probably trying to like help out like Chad Green's just well-being, because the first half of the year he was just had like a 75 ERA, and then he's just like, oh, Chad Green's actually pretty good, which he was, and he looked like regular Chad Green again. So honestly, I think they should move away from the opener now that we talked about it and put him back into like a good like longer relief role, because he was like lights out, especially in the playoffs too. I remember I tweeted out like his jersey is like, I'm buying Chad Green's jersey right now, and then immediately after that I think he gave up a home run, and I was like, well, I'm gonna delete this now.
I mean, the home run that he gave up was in game, what was that, game four?
Yeah, it was like three or four.
The ALCS. Yeah, it was to
that was the walk-off, wasn't it? No.
No, it was – No, that's not what I'm – yeah. I mean, he did – but I can't think of his name. The first baseman for the Astros. Gurriel. Yeah. It was an inside pitch. It was a fastball. It was like 98, 99 miles an hour. Like – 4 inches off the plate inside. You tell me that.
That's a good pitch.
You would tell me that. You'd tell me that motherfucker didn't know what was coming. Please. No, nobody hits that pitch.
Now, yeah.
Nobody hits that pitch. He was sitting fastball inside. Yeah. And just, you tip your cap if he didn't get a little, red light that he saw. But.
Or a letter buzz. I've heard they had they have patches that had like a little buzz they got. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked. It's 2020 now, so you got something. I just think, to be honest, like that banging, I know we're not going to get back into this, but the banging was just so like caveman. Like, you have all this technology and stuff. Like, that is so blatantly obvious. Like, even you got to believe they went through like the top everybody and say, like, listen, yeah, no, this will work. We'll just bang on this trash can. Like, that's it. Everybody says, yeah, no, that'll work. We won't get caught.
I mean, sometimes you put the stuff, like the most obvious thing in your face that you don't realize because it's so in your face. You're like, nah, it couldn't be anything. They wouldn't be that stupid.
And then they even went, I know John Boy had all those video breakdowns and he would put out like the whistling. I don't know if the whistling, but the whistling was more like low key too, because it was Texas. So they do like the whole, they have the vuvuzelas or whatever they got in the background, but that Jesus, sounded more.
Vuvuzelas?
Vuvuzelas. Vuvuzelas. From the fucking, I don't know, but I wouldn't be shocked if that was in 2017. So I'm pretty sure if it won them a World Series, they definitely kept doing it. I mean, I'm not on the inside, but I wouldn't stop if it was working. So,
yeah, I don't know. It's, the whole thing is funny, but that pitch that Chad Green threw was actually a good pitch. I know everybody was watching, like, yeah. What are you doing? No, you look back at that pitch. It was actually a good pitch.
It's a very good pitch. Yeah.
But Chad Green also, like, Chad Green's a. I want the reason I don't like the opener, especially too, when I have a guy like Chad Green pitching in the first inning, like I want that guy in high leverage situations because that guy is so. And I understand that people will come back and say, well, he's going to face the top of the lineup. That might be an opportunity for them to score with some of their best hitters. Yes, I understand that, but I'm of the belief that the later in the game, it's just different. There's a different feeling. There's a different energy to the game itself. So people perform in different ways. And I want Chad Green, who's got probably, I mean, I think 2 years ago, when they had all the nicknames for the bullpen, they were talking about Chad Green, who had the best fastball in the pen, all the guys out there. So, I mean, like that guy's got one of the most lively fastballs in the league. I want him at the end of the game.
Yeah. I mean, you said it too, with the leverage and how he's always going under pressure like that. And that was something that was weird to me too, with Adam Ottavino, because I remember during the season, obviously he was lights out. It was throwing a wiffle ball out there with that slider and nobody could touch him. And I even looked up a stat with like the leverage index. We were getting deep into the WOBA and all that stuff. I'm not really big into the numbers like that, but I mean, he had like the highest leverage index on the Yankees, which obviously means he's used in the highest leverage situations, which is actually cool to see because that includes Chapman. So you would think that the closer was in the highest leverage index. But,
well, Chapman comes in the ninth every time, right?
So it's clean. So
it's clean. And then Ottavino would come in. I mean, normally the eighth, but you'd see him in the seventh, sometimes even in the sixth inning. But yeah, he was more of a fire putter outer.
Yeah, he would come in with like bases loaded or something. But he had that. And then all of a sudden, the playoffs, he just absolutely shits the bed. So I just don't understand like what happened with him. I guess it's just the playoffs. I mean, it started
in September. I mean, end of August, September, he was bad. He started end of the season. He just fell off a cliff and he couldn't. Problem with him was that he couldn't throw a freaking strike. It was so frustrating. Like how many times did he walk? He would come in the game and just walk a dude.
And then they get pulled.
and then get pulled. It's like, come on, man. It drives me nuts when relievers come in and walk guys. Yeah. So, and it would be four pitch walks too.
Yeah, I know.
You know, like people, they were spitting on his slider. That was the Frisbee coming across the plate.
Yeah. I never really liked that Boone pulled him so early though, because I mean, and if you do it time after time after time, you pull him that quick, like that is horrible for his confidence. So
throw a goddamn
like,
strike. Throw a goddamn
know, I
strike
get that. Yeah, I mean, but like in a random like regular season game, I feel like give him a little bit of time to get working. Maybe I don't know.
I got no love for professional.
Well, in the playoffs, in the playoffs, obviously you're gonna get pulled right away, and that's just weird because I don't know what we should like expect from him coming next year. I think I'm expecting him to be the same Adam Ottavino that we saw like in the regular season for the majority. But I mean, it's hard to, you always have that weird nagging memory of him being just like a broken pitching machine, just shooting balls everywhere.
Yeah, well, now you can't even pull him because now you got to face three batters.
Oh yeah, that too. So now he won't be pulled after
I hate
four
that
pitches
rule
because
so much.
You got to face all three.
yeah. If you look at the numbers, it doesn't actually happen that often. Like guys leaving the game after just one batter, but with him, yeah, he got pulled on the walks. I mean, look, bottom line, just throw some strikes. Like show them that you can throw a strike and your Frisbee will be worth a damn again.
Yeah. Yeah. So I mean, speaking of the bullpen, I know the hater stuff has been tossed around and then it died down a little and then now it's back. I don't know, I haven't heard much about it in the past week, but like, and we also heard that Andujar was like going to be the headliner on that deal. I don't know if it includes like Devi Garcia or maybe a couple other pieces, but I wanted to see what you would think on the trade, like a Hader trade, and would you do it if it included a guy like Andujar and possibly the Devi, or what do you think the package would look like if they were doing it?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be a significant package for sure. So the Yankees are in a, like, I for a long time, I did not want to get rid of any prospects. Like, I was a prospect hoarder for a while, right? But a lot of those guys now are in the pros. And now when you look at what the team is, like, they're ready to go. Like, this team needs to win now. Like, there's the time is now. It's never been better. And so I think if they have an opportunity to get a guy like that, then Cashman would probably overpay a little bit. But knowing Cashman, man, he's just going to wait, and then strike when nobody thinks anything's happening. So it wouldn't surprise me if a guy like they've shown that they will give up their number one pitching prospect. They gave up Sheffield for Paxton, but you got to get something good in return. And Hader's controllable, I think, for 3 years. So this year and then 2 more years, I believe. Maybe it's 2 years. But he's a controlled piece at a really good price. So it's a move that would make them much better right now. So yeah, I wouldn't hate it.
He's like 25 or 20. Yeah.
He's so filthy.
He literally won NL Reliever of the Year along with Chapman. So having him and Chapman in the same bullpen, the two best relievers last year, would be absolutely insane. And I'd obviously slot him in the eighth spot. So having the eighth and ninth inning absolutely locked up, and then right below that, Britton, who had a 1.9 ERA last year.
Yeah.
Amazing. And awesome. He's in the seventh. So then that pushes like Ottavino to the sixth. And then we only need like, they got Chad Green too, who can go two. So then we borderline need any starters at all. But then we got Garrett Cole too. So, and he'll go nine. So that's perfectly fine. But I'm less on the fence of, I know the prospects, like they've done us well, but it's like definitely a win now time.
Yeah.
But I feel like Andujar is also a win now piece because, I mean, him and Glaber, when they were rookies, both, I mean, Andujar was the better prospect that year. He was the Yankees MVP in 2018. And I mean, I think he should have won Rookie of the Year over Shohei Ohtani, but he's just a unicorn and he pitched also. So,
that's true.
Yeah. But the fact that, I mean, the numbers were there. Andujar was batting 300 with 30 something bombs, nearly 100 RBIs.
A million doubles.
So I'm just saying, like, the fact that he was the better prospect over Glaber in their rookie season. And then Glaber takes this stride in the second year. So I'm just translating that to Andujar and seeing, like, if Glaber can do that and become an absolute stud this year, then imagine what Andujar could do too. That's why I'm a little bit hugging on him. So I don't know.
The problem. So I think that where you get tricky is like, is comparing two guys and assuming that there will be a similar jump, because I think they're very different players. Like Miggy, I love watching him hit. He's probably one of the more fun guys. Like, he reminds me of, you know, not to this extent by any means, but like a Vlad Guerrero type where he can hit the ball.
Exactly,
he's a good bad ball hitter. Like, I love those dudes who just make a ton of contact and throw the bat at it. And he's a doubles machine. Problem is he doesn't have there's no place for him right now, like as far as the field. So if he can come out and show that he improved on third base, then I think that's the biggest key for him being a dynamic piece in this team. Because yes, he could be DH. Absolutely, we could use him in the DH spot. But I feel like still that DH spot is going to be used as a flex piece almost, right? It's like it's got to be a piece for a guy to get a half a day off. Like, Stanton's gonna be in that DH spot a lot. I think he would be the primary DH because you're not looking at him is he gonna be the primary left fielder while Hicks is out and center field is with Gardy? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they do it, but it's. The problem with Andujar is he just limits the flexibility for the team. But he's a damn good player and he helps the offense now. But I just think that when you get if you have an opportunity to get it, I think the key piece of Hader is that he's controlled for those 2 to 3 years. That's a huge piece of that.
Yeah, and you definitely know what you're getting out of him too. Like, he comes in. I mean, he did blow it a little bit in the wild card game, but regardless of that, he obviously won NL Reliever of the Year. But I know DH is a crowded position. Like, obviously we use it as a flex, and I'm wishful thinking that Stanton could play left, but he is not the everyday left fielder that he was on the Marlins. I don't even remember. Was he, the primary fielder in, on the Marlins, or did he
played,
DH?
He played right field.
Yeah.
Yeah, he
all
played
day,
right
all day though.
I mean, yeah, he was the right
MVP
fielder
here.
I mean, whenever he plays, he's not like a bad fielder. So I think he can do it. I mean, I don't know much, but it's up to him. And he's also made of glass and paper, so we'll find out if he could be healthy this year. But
that's the key. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm Team Stanton this year. I think he's going to have a big year. Because, I mean, his first year, everybody thought he had a bad year, but he also almost hit for 100 RBIs and 30-something bombs too. So.
Yeah. I mean, I'm glad he's on the team. I'm not kicking Stanton off the team. Like, he's a damn good player. I think people put too much stock in the bad at-bats.
Yeah.
And that's just something that we didn't see until he came over. You know, because who's watching bad Marlins at-bats? Like, nobody sees that. You see the clips of him hitting the moon with the ball. And that's what you see. And when he comes over and he's got these at-bats that are just looks like a clueless guy. Because sometimes he did. It looked like he was chopping wood occasionally. It was just, I think it was a shock for a lot of people to see that.
Yeah. Now the spotlight's on him.
Yeah. But he's a damn good player. He's got to stay healthy.
Yeah. A bunch of people, some of our friends are like, I hate Stanton. I want him out. I want to trade him right now. We'll put him in the hater trade. Like, what? Hold on. Pump the brakes a little. Like, the guy won an MVP 2 years ago. Didn't play last year. So just throw that year out. And the year he came to us, he had a good year. And it's also a transition to the Bronx from Miami, where you got like 17 people watching you. So you go to, I mean, you got us screaming out there. I mean, us alone is more than Miami. So yeah. I don't know. But I feel like the everyday left fielder is, well, not everyday, but they'll obviously shift it around. Big Gardner in center. And then I feel like Talkman definitely could be like the primary fielder out there. I mean, he's been. He played half the year last year, and he was one of the tops in defensive runs saved. So he clearly plays a good left.
Yeah.
So
I like what Boone did last year with switching out the outfielders and DH like consistently. I don't think there was the same outfield lineup, you know, 3 days in a row or something. It was constantly changing.
Yeah. No, I mean, I can see Talkman. I think he's going to actually play a lot more center too, because he's got that ability. And they, you know, Gardner can absolutely play out there. But at the same time, you know, Gardner proved that he could stay healthy last year, and he didn't really have any much of a decline like he normally does. And he's usually on the field. It's just a matter of him being battered up and you know, bruised up and you know, towards the end of the year kind of tailing off offensively. We didn't see that last year, but they're going to obviously want to try to keep him, especially with Hicks as a very big unknown. I think we're going to see a lot of Talkman out in center field.
Yeah, and Hicks is too. Hicks, with talking about like Domingo coming back, Hicks is going to be a nice piece to come back. He's probably about halfway through the year. He's going to get back like Didi did last year, so that definitely doesn't hurt. I love Hicks. He's just when he pimps the walks and everything like that, it's just so swaggy. It's amazing. And I mean, obviously, he plays a damn good outfield too. That diving catch against the Twins was unbelievable. So
yeah, it was a stupid catch. No, he's damn good, man. He needs to stop like the soft tissue injuries need to end with that.
Yeah. Like, and we just locked him up too.
Can we quit playing golf?
Yeah. Is that how he got injured?
I don't know. I mean, I know he's a big golfer. I was like, how about we just limit that? Like, just stretch more.
Yeah, it could be worse. It could have Yoenis Céspedes getting hurt on his farm. So
we're chasing boars, or wasn't that?
Yeah. Like, it was on like a tractor or something. I don't know. But
I still like the story better that he was the kick by a donkey. I felt like that one played better.
Yeah, everybody would just make up shit. We have a bunch of Mets fans that are friends, and they're just like, I don't even know what the fuck he's doing. I don't even know why he has a farm. Just stay in New York. There's nothing going on other than like just taxis. Just don't get hit by a car. But I don't know.
He's got paid, man. He does not care.
Yeah, no, he doesn't care. I mean, they settled, which is what I think. That's like probably what the Yankees are going to do with like Ellsbury. I don't know if there's been anything going on with him anymore, but they're probably just going to settle because they filed for a grievance. So, I mean, it's not my pockets. I don't really care. The Yankees are going to pay him something
pay
and
him
tell
him
to walk.
But
give him the hush money and then get him out of there.
Yeah, I kind of hope they bleed him dry personally, but the I don't know what. We haven't heard really much about that. Obviously, the ML, the Players Association, is going to fight it. Yankees are going to try to get a couple dimes back. Randy Levine's definitely going in on that. I hope he gets him personally because I hate Jacoby Ellsbury. I think he's a piece of shit.
Yeah, I mean, the money is not a fucking problem for the Yankees, but like, it's a matter of principle. Like, the guy didn't fucking play a game since the year he came to us, and he just hasn't done anything, just making up injuries. So I don't even know.
Yeah,
but
I don't. you know, I don't even want to hear about that guy. I hope they get money back from him so that they can use it and turn it into something productive.
Yeah. My favorite thing of all time was when Ortiz turns around to him and he goes, "What's up, rich bitch?"
It's a good clip.
That was funny. But yeah, the outfield looks good. It's going to be like a nice little revolving door, I feel like. But, and we'll get obviously reinforcements back. One thing I'm just concerned about is, well, not really concerned, but just a question I have is, I don't know why they haven't extended DJ yet, because, I mean, the guy's obviously a full-blown stud, and he plays anywhere you want him to, hits 330, apparently has power now, too. That's not the Coors Field effect isn't a thing. I just don't know what – he has 1 year left on his contract, and I don't ever want to see this guy leave the pinstripes. So I don't know what's going on that front. I don't know if you have anything going on that, but I don't want to see him – leave ever. I want him to play forever.
I'm surprised. So yeah, like they need to extend him because I don't want him to touch free agency because I love him. I love DJ LeMay.
He would be picked up so quickly.
The thing is that he's outplayed his contract by so much already. And yeah, you know, with everything kind of tailoring down and with free agency and the Yankees kind of having their roster relatively set, you know, we may see a couple of like minor moves, I think, but or if a trade comes through like that, like Hader or something like that, I wouldn't be surprised if they, you know, use that time to either negotiate or try to get LeMahieu locked up, because it's just a no-brainer, man. Like, solidify the middle. Get Gleyber and DJ up there locked up for the next, you know, 3 to 4 years, and let's roll. You just – now we know what's up the middle. DJ will play his ass off forever, and he's just a perfect Yankee. So, yeah,
he's,
I want to
– He is. He's such a baseball guy. He just fucking gets the job done day in, day out.
Yeah, he doesn't even smile. He just there, plays baseball, goes home. That's it.
He doesn't care about anything else.
Yeah, and he also played the like full year, knock on wood. But like, he's durable too for the most part. He's like the only one that didn't catch the injury bug last year. So,
and now he's knock on wood again. But and now he's going to be playing at second base relatively full time, right? Which he's a freaking Gold Glover. Like,
yeah.
But the dude will do anything you ask him to. If you ask him to go to center field, I'd put my money on DJ LeMahieu playing a good center field.
I'd be confident. Put him out there. I don't care.
Yeah, more so than the people that are trying to move Miggy to first base. I don't know why they, like, anyone's like, oh, like, yeah, Miggy can just move to first. Like, yeah, no problem. Like, I mean, the guy can't figure out third. So I don't know what makes you think. Usually when you move to another position, it's a Gold Glover that can figure it out somewhere else, like DJ going to first or something like that. So I don't understand why everyone's saying move him to first. I don't want him – he's not a fielder. He's a DH, which is why – I mean, his use would be kind of limited too, is with the revolving door. But
I think it's just people looking for more flexibility. So if he can show something, then, yeah, you know, then it's the guys who want him on the team are rooting for him to, like, to get another spot defensively, just because then now he's got another flex. Now he's a more flexible piece to stay on the team because, like you said, if he's a DH – you know, the flexibility is not there for him. So
yeah, that's the only thing you're providing.
Yeah. I mean, especially with our first base situation too, because those, I mean, whether Ford's going to be on there and Voit, and I mean, they're pretty much also DHs, the revolving door, and then Stanton. So it's, I mean, we don't have Encarnacion anymore, so that narrows it down a little, but like, it's still a loaded position there. So, I mean, having Miggy being handcuffed to being a DH is definitely not something that's good.
Because you could literally throw anyone in there.
In the DH, yeah. I mean, I'm still on Team Miggy. This conversation is kind of swinging me to the Hader trade back again, but I think that he would be like a good piece right now also, so I don't really want to give up him plus Devi, which who knows what Devi is, but what we're hearing is he's a very, very good piece, and the fact that Cashman hasn't offloaded him in the typical Cashman fashion, that he just makes a prospect look good and then he just throws him out for a great return, like Gleyber or whatever they do, and then they do nothing when they're on the other team. But the fact that he held on to him, I feel like Debbie is actually something special. So
maybe it's also very, I mean, he rose up really fast too last year. So, and but you saw constant improvement. The thing with Devi Garcia is that I'm not sure where the Yankees see him, like, long-term. Do they see him as a starting piece? Do they see him as a reliever? Because a lot of people are talking about him as a reliever. If you see him as a reliever, and now you're talking about packaging him for a guy like Josh Hader, well, then what are we doing here? Because Hader's controllable, and he is a top reliever. So you're looking at the ceiling right now. Yeah. So I don't know, like, and then if Miggy's the swing in that trade, then I'd probably make that deal.
Yeah.
If they see Garcia as a reliever.
Yeah. But,
I mean, I love David Garcia from what I've seen, but again, who the hell knows? He's a prospect. Yeah.
I mean, like you said, like literally you're getting the absolute top of the top. Like he won reliever of the year. So what more do you ask for? I mean, other than having a younger prospect who can you can control for a lot longer of a time, but Hader
too. 25. He's 25.
Who, Debbie?
No, Hader.
Hader. Yeah, I was going to say. I don't know.
25?
Yeah, I mean, he's only been in the league. Who did he start with before the Brewers? He was on a different team before. But regardless, he was just recently in the league, and he has come out and just dominated from the get-go. So
I had no idea he was 25.
Yeah, that's what we were talking about before.
I'm looking that up right now to confirm it. I may be talking out of my ass. No, he's 25.
That's ridiculous.
April 7th, he'll be 26.
And the thing is, too, like, I'm just thinking out loud here, but if we get him, obviously the bullpen, it was number one before, and now it becomes disgusting, even because Betances wasn't even on the team last year, which I'm still sad about, but he wasn't on the team last year, so we're not losing anything technically. So, I mean, adding him to that already amazing bullpen is on an island alone again, and then you go in, and then, I mean, Chapman's a little older now, so if you get Chapman, then Hader can become the closer after Chapman eventually leaves or something. So I think that'd be a good little, like...
Chapman's not going anywhere, but he just opted in, and he's going to be... And they also have Britton. So, the move is going to have to be in Cashman's favor. He's going to have to see, like, mm-hmm. an obvious value there, because right now it would be adding to a strength already, right? So
yeah.
there's got to be a clear value for him, I think. Yeah. And if he sees that, he'll pull the trigger. I got a lot of faith in Brian Cashman.
I do too. I mean, Brian Cashman is the watchful protector. and he knows how to do everything. It's just amazing. And I mean, I don't know. The thing is too, with this trade, I'm moving more on your side now, but like our bats are clearly there. So, and if you have pitching, then with this, so we put up minimum 6 runs a game. So if you have that kind of starting rotation and now that pitching staff, which I mapped out with the 6th and this and that, and there's no one scoring any runs. So if we put up 2 runs in the first inning, the game's over. So like we can win.
Yeah.
You'd like to hope so.
Yeah. I'd like to see some more length out of the starters, but
yeah.
Because otherwise we're running into a situation now where we get a bullpen that's relied on too much in the postseason, yeah. and you start seeing falters, and you know, hopefully a guy obviously like Cole can very much like swing that a little bit more and be an anchor, but you know, until I can see it with my own 2 eyes.
Yeah, I'm so excited for him to be opening day. I'm already getting butterflies. It's like 90 days away, but I just can't wait for him to be on the mound.
It's gonna be fun to watch for sure.
Yeah. I mean, he's just so fucking good. And especially that he's now the number one. I feel like the rest of the Yankees starting rotation just falls into place too, because they don't need to be the number one. Like Seppi obviously has like the falters, like he gets a little nervous sometimes. So it seems so like having Cole there and him not having to be the number one anymore and being younger, like that just makes everybody else more reliable. And even Paxton too, because Paxton borderline was the number one last year too. And then Tanaka is just all reliable. I think Tanaka's honestly are too, but just everybody else takes a little pressure off them because he's going to go out and dominate in the big game. And then everybody else can get their game 2, game 3, it's just going to make everybody else better. I feel like that's what obviously there's nothing to hate about the move, but that's just an extra piece that makes me hyped about it.
It's like the clear cut starter. It's the clear cut number one.
I mean, over anybody else in the league.
Yeah.
I mean,
anyways in the league.
We put up a poll. It was like about who was the king of New York for starting rotation for him or DeGrom. And honestly, it's close. I don't know. What do you think? You think who's better, DeGrom or Cole?
I mean,
like,
yeah. So you're talking about two guys that are just utterly dominant. So I'll say Cole just because he's a Yankee, because it's fun to say. Yeah. But I mean, DeGrom is absolutely nails. So yeah. when I have one of the best, whether he's 1A or just a clear 1, yeah. gives a
doesn't
shit.
Matter to me. Yeah,
best A and B. Yeah,
yeah. So it's and like having Seve as a number 2 is that's what makes it so like this rotation, like you could drool over it because Seve if he's that guy that we saw, or somewhere similar to what we saw in the beginning of 18, I mean, good luck.
It's stupid. Yeah. And that's the same thing too, because we didn't see fully healthy Severino in the playoffs. That was him coming back, just trying to help out the team. Like, after a full spring training, full off season, everything, I think we're going to get.
And he was still great. I mean, he threw way too many pitches, but he was still fucking lights out.
Well, he was hurt too.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Yeah.
He definitely wasn't healthy. He just went out there to help out the squad. But I mean, fully healthy Severino is absolutely disgusting. We were thinking about him as being what Cole is now. Like, if he hadn't gotten hurt, I feel like he could be at that same caliber, if not very close. So him next year, I'm really excited for, especially as not being the number one.
I think one of the things that's going to be really interesting this year is that there's a clear shift in what the Yankees and how they are adjusting to the league and pitching with Matt Blake. And now they just brought in Tressi for strength and conditioning. Like,
yeah,
they're definitely going into a different era of how they approach pitching. And obviously with Cole coming over, that guy made a very big transition from Pittsburgh to Houston. And a lot of that had to do with conditioning. If you look at the pictures, I can't stand all the jersey swaps of old Cole from when he was with Pittsburgh and when he's with, he looks like a totally different guy. He had all the baby fat with Pittsburgh, and now he just looks like a man, like a chiseled dude. And you can see that there was a transformation in the way that his body looks and like the way he is I think going about his conditioning. And then clearly what they did with pitching analytics and spin rate and all these stuff, like, that's all going to be very much on the forefront of the Yankees moving forward, like up and down the minor leagues, the pitching staff, as far as the coaches, it's all turned over. It's all different. So there's going to be a big shift.
It's so important. It's so important.
So, but now we got these guys like on the team, we got the Tanakas, the Paxtons, the Sevies, like, how are they going to benefit from this? Could be very, very, very beneficial.
It's so important. And I feel like, you know, a good – everyone thinks about, like, you know, these pitchers are the best in the world. Like, what else could they learn? But these conditioning coaches are so fucking unbelievable. Like, one of my good buddies, he's in the minor leagues for the Dodgers. And he was actually in the Yasiel Puig trade. So he was from the Cincinnati Reds and now he's in the Dodgers program. And he gained 10 miles an hour on his fastball just from that transition and that coach. And now he's sitting at 96, you know.
That's crazy. We used to play against
He was at 86?
Yeah.
He had a fastball at 86?
No, I mean, that was a rough number. But, like,
I don't know how he prospected that.
I think he tops out at, like, 98 now or something, 99.
Yeah, I remember playing against him when we were in high school. His brother too. His brother was the fastest guy in the world. He was like Ricky Henderson, but this kid just fucking gassed it by everybody. He was obviously standing alone as the best pitcher, but
he's gonna be something else.
It's so cool. We should get him on the pod too. Just have to talk to him about how it's like. I mean, he's now a full blown baseball player too. So, but he's on the Dodgers now, so we got a little beef. we had a fun question we wanted to ask you. So there's the DH, obviously, in the American League. If you had to pick one player on the active roster to be the designated roider, like steroid user, so any of them, so just one player, active roster, you can just inject him with roids, let him do whatever he wants to do, like the steroid era, who would it be?
I would inject. Who would I inject? Okay.
Funny way to put it.
It may not be like, so who's going on the stall? Who am I shooting in the ass? It's not going to be an obvious answer. Maybe it's too obvious. It's in your face. I'm injecting Stanton because I want him to be an absolute monster. He's already a monster.
Yeah.
But Stanton on steroids? That's like Barry Bonds monster.
Two sides to the story.
Yeah. Like, I'm not, I don't want to transform like a Tyler Wade with steroids. Like, what's the point of that?
Yeah.
Give me the big strong guy that already hits bombs, and now give me him on steroids.
Yeah, we put up a poll, and a lot of people were saying Stanton and Judge. I just think that I agree with that. Obviously, he goes from being Giancarlo Stanton, who doesn't already can hit
one. He stays on the field too. He stays on the field because
that's true. Recovery.
they will help you stay on the field in the short term.
Yeah. So I mean, but making him, he obviously go from Stanton hitting 56 bombs, whatever it was in his prime in his MVP year, to now Barry Bonds 72.5 or something like that. But I just feel like if you take my answer would be taking a guy like DJ because he's already hitting 330 and then he's hitting 20 something and then you give him steroids and now he's hitting 45.
I'm not fucking with DJ.
He's too perfect. He's too perfect.
How dare you? How dare you fuck with him?
I just think that if you take him,
that man is a saint.
Now he's hitting. I don't mean he would never do it either.
He'd be like, he would stop the needle.
He'd be like, no, guys, what are you doing?
I don't think the needle would go into his skin. I think it would break.
God wouldn't allow it. I mean, he would probably not even let Stanton do it. He'd be like, what are you doing? But yeah, I just feel like
DJ would try to block everybody.
I'm already great.
I just feel like if you take him, I mean, his morals aside, he won't let it happen. But I think if you take him, who's hitting 330, then he's now hitting 50 bombs instead of however many hit this year, like 26 or something. I think it's just
he hit over 25 because I want to bet with 25 home runs. So
I remember you guys. Oh, yeah. You guys had that bet. I listened to you guys and I remember you said like for the first half of the year. I don't know what was the original number you guys said.
No, so we did projections. We did like the projections in the beginning of the year, and I had him over 20 for the projections, and Andrew laughed in my face, and then I laughed in his face when it happened. But when we were at spring training, Frank, one of our writers. We were down there and, you know, it was after one of the games. So we had been drinking, we were at a bar in Tampa and I bet him that DJ would hit 25 and I was like, okay, that's the next day. I'm like, that was probably a stupid bet because the bet was for, whoever loses has to buy the other, playoff tickets. And yeah, he hit 26. I think he hit 26.
So, what was his highest before coming to the Yankees?
18. I think the last year or the. Yeah, the last year with the Colorado, it was 17 or 18 or 16, 17, 18, somewhere in there.
Yeah, so going in 25 is definitely a stretch. I mean, especially going from what we thought was Coors Field to Yankee State. I mean, we have the short porch too, so it's kind of.
Well, that's it. He goes oppo a lot. I mean, he sprays the ball to right. That's why I picked it. I thought it was going to be an uptick. Obviously, I didn't really account for the juice ball by any means or like the inflation in home runs across the board, but. I just assumed that a lot of those doubles that are peppered in the right field of Coors that have a low trajectory might go over the wall in right field. And,
hell yeah, yeah.
You know, you saw more of that happening. So
you saw that.
A lot of Derek Jeter home runs. Too.
Yeah, and he had a bunch of walk-offs against the A's that were to right field. And it was just, I mean, 26 home runs is nothing to sneeze at. I don't know. I'm just curious if they're still going to do the juice balls this year. That's a big question mark for everything. But everyone like kind of freaked out about it. But I'm just curious. I'm just curious why they would even change it to begin with, but I mean,
it's more entertaining for non-baseball fans to watch baseball.
I mean, that's the whole like trying to shorten in the game too thing. I just feel like anybody who already isn't a baseball fan isn't really going to be turned on to baseball because of that. And then people who are baseball fans are going to be more turned off because you're trying to change the game. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. It's interesting because when you think about like how it's consumed, like when you guys were watching, when you're watching stuff around the league, like how are you watching it? You're watching it on clips on social, right? Whether it's on Instagram or on an app that comes across on an update or something like that. So you think about that, like the top clips that are shared are home runs. Like you see a lot of that. Mm-hmm. So I could see MLB trying to like play to that a little bit, almost like the House of Highlight play to that audience. But I think that's almost too forward thinking for them. Like, I don't think that they actually thought that far ahead, but, I think the Rays to the teams, I just don't think they expected it to be as drastic of a difference as fast. That's personally like, I don't think they expected it to be as big of a difference and they would slowly jump it up. But when you look at that ball and they, you know, they were showing it on Yes or whatever a couple of times and like, it's significantly lower the seams. Yeah. And, I think that's the biggest thing. Like the guys can't just, the fastball guys, the guys like Hap, who lived up in the zone with the fastball that were fly ball pitchers that, you know, were getting those longer fly ball outs. They're going out of the park now, and that guy has to completely reinvent himself and change what he does that he's been doing his entire career. He's got to change it because Hap, if without that ball, probably looking at Hap as no one's complaining about him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not as many people are complaining about him. We'll always complain, but not as much.
But you also got guys like Verlander, who obviously won Cy Young, but he gave up more home runs than he's ever given in his career.
Yeah, he led the league.
Solo shots, but because no one's ever on base against him. But the juice ball, he was the main person who was pissed off about it. Isn't he the one that like called everybody out about it? Like, these balls got to be juiced or something. But yeah,
he was definitely
a lot of them.
Yeah. But I mean, it shows too. Guys like Brett Gardner hitting for power now, apparently.
That's when you start seeing it. You're like, you start looking at what.
You're like, wait a minute.
Yeah, and I mean, he's helped by the short porch, but his home runs were bombs. Like, he wasn't just sneaking them out. I mean, a lot of them were line drives, but I remember him hitting into the upper deck all the time, like section 205 and everything.
So I mean, I think Guardy has definitely changed his approach too. Like, he definitely gets the ball up a little bit more, and I think that's just him like trying to be more productive as he's getting older. And he realizes that he just got to get the ball up, because if the ball goes up and you're at Yankee Stadium, like, you have a much higher chance.
Yeah, you're just making adjustments.
So, more power to him, but he also saw that the ball was going out. So,
he's a smart player, man.
He's a wily vet, and I love it.
He was never going anywhere else. I mean, he was going to resign. I just thought it was funny that when we were dealing with Cole, he knew to just sit back and wait, because we'll take care of you after. And they did. They gave him extra money than he should have gotten. He got 12 and a half, and I mean, they're just paying him just for what he's done before. But I mean, Gardner leaving, especially with CeCe leaving and like all the locker room presence of CeCe, we needed Gardner, because he's the only one still there from the 09 team. So, I mean, his locker room presence, especially with the banging and shit, just we needed him in the lineup.
Bang.
So. And especially with Hicks going down too, we need the outfield depth too.
Yeah, I mean, I think that was the biggest piece, is the fact that they need the outfield depth for sure. And he can play all positions if you need him to. But no, it's important to keep a semblance of the locker room presence. I mean, I think sometimes that's a little overblown. But you can't, when you're losing CeCe, and if you lost a guy like Gardner too, like, those are two significant pieces that you'd be losing. So it's nice to have a slower transition and not just like jump off a cliff.
Yeah, exactly.
Throw it away.
So last thing, because I know you got to run. Gleyber this year, whenever he would toss the old rec specs on, he turned into just the Barry Bonds. I don't know what was going on. I remember the first game where he wore those goggles. I think he had two home runs, and one was a grand slam or something. So I personally want to see the goggles come back. What do you think, he's going to wear the goggles this year?
All right. First of all, I can't call them goggles, all right? Because I had an eye injury when I was a kid, so I had to wear the big I don't know if you remember who Chris Sabo was, but he was one of the first guys to ever. The only reason I probably remember him was because he wore the rec specs. But they were like the big freaking rec specs that you see back in the 80s, early 90s. And I had to wear those when I was a kid because I had an eye injury. I had to protect the eye. And so I got love for people who wear rec specs. when I see what's his fault? Tyler – I can't think. I've tried to erase his the memory of Tyler with the pitcher that was
Glasnow.
No, for the Yankees reliever, and he's now with
Tyler Clippard.
Clippard, thank you. Yeah. So I try to erase the memory of him, but like he was bad news for team rec spec.
Yeah,
I love Glaber's just wearing them because he thinks they look cool. He said they're not prescription. They're not. I just want to wear them. You know. Like,
did he say that?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure there's no. It's a fashion piece. Like, dude just likes wearing the rec specs.
I mean, it's got to be. Hey, whatever works. He wears them like on and off, so like it's not a prescription thing. So he just looks. I mean, he looks kind of fire in them. So I mean, and it works. So whenever it might be good luck, I'm team rec spec. So
I'm a big superstitious guy. So if they're working, wear them.
Yeah, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. So
I still play softball. Like slow pitch softball in the men's league. Uh-huh. And I wear my rec specs, man.
You rock the rec specs.
I gotta protect the eye. If one eye goes down, I'm in big trouble. So, I embrace the people that have the rec specs, and I'm just glad they're not those big ass clunky things that they, you know, like Horace Grant used to wear in the NBA. Like, saw those like big ass ones that have the strap across your back. Like, damn, they were not doing any kids any favors who had to wear those goddamn things.
Yeah, they were asking them to be bullied. I mean, they look like the regular Oakleys, the ones he's wearing. So you just kind of look.
So they're just fashionable.
They're not doing anything.
Yeah, it's a fashion statement. They're probably no prescription, like the random like goggles that people wear just for fashion, like the.
So Glaber's making a fashion piece and look cool. So I like that.
Hey, whatever, I mean, man. He's got the swag going on. He's like the Javi Baez.
He can do whatever he wants. I don't care.
Speaking of Javi Baez, imagine him and Javi Baez up the middle if they kept him. I mean, thank God we got him for Chapman, and then Chapman came right back. So, I mean, but they got what they wanted. They got the World Series. But him and Glaber up the middle would have been something crazy.
It would have been something crazy because Javi Baez is probably one of the most fun guys to watch on the field. Yeah. Like he's just a freak. And some of the stuff, those tags, man, some of the tags that he makes.
Yeah, happen, I love those.
Nuts.
Especially
the
one
to watch.
Yeah, especially the one everybody knows, the Puerto Rico. He's on the Puerto Rican national team.
Oh, yeah.
Just pointing while he's tagging the other guy.
I love that play.
That is like the coolest thing ever.
The people that are baseball fans and that have been baseball fans for a while that don't like this like exciting piece of baseball that's coming up. Like,
oh,
you're
hell yeah.
Crazy. I don't understand it. Because when you're watching what these guys do, they're having so much fun out there. And yeah, bottom line, have fun. Because that's what this sport is. It's fun.
Yeah. It's a game.
Yeah.
It's literally a game.
Yeah. I don't like the old fart Brian McCann's or like even Mad Bum. Mad Bum is just like, go to your base and like, and
Max, I don't mind that on the field. Like, I don't mind that on the field because that brings another dynamic to it. But I kind of like that there are some old school guys that will try to correct things because that makes for fun entertainment for all of us.
Yeah.
But as a fan, like, I certainly don't. You know, I don't hate the antics. Like, I like it. I think it's fun. If you're going to – the only thing I will say is that, like, in the old days, if you pimped something, then there could be repercussions on the field. And I got no problem with that either.
Yeah, and there's the like fights and then
– Yeah. So if you're doing it and somebody doesn't like it, like, expect to get hit. Part of the game.
I mean, some of the best memories.
I like all of that stuff.
Yeah. Some of the best memories we have are, like, the brawls between the Red Sox and everything like that. And – I mean, I just love that. I mean, this year too, with Max Muncy, he said, "If you want it, go grab it out of the ocean." Like, that's the shit too. The back and forth, the friction between Mad Bum, and that's why I kind of didn't really want Mad Bum if we were gonna get Mad Bum, because he'd be, I don't know, he'd be
a crotchety young man that everybody thinks is old. Yeah, he's like 29 years old. That's crazy.
It's crazy. Such an old soul. It's like one of our other friends, Nolan, who's on the podcast too. He's got his record player, and he's exactly like that. When we did the all-time draft too, he would take all of like the 1920s guys and stuff like that. And he even called me out too, because I was more like the youthful teams, or especially at least 90s and above. And he was like, "Luke, how many players you got that are like before the 90s?" I was like, "I mean, I got Luke Gehrig, I got Joe DiMaggio." He's like, "All right, just checking." But he's just such an old soul, like Mad Bum. It was a weird analogy, but
he was cleaning up from the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Not that there were very many guys to pick from the 80s, but
yeah. All right, man. This was fun. I know you got to run 11:30, but I'm happy to have you on. This was awesome.
Yeah, fellas, thanks for having me on, man. It was a good time. I appreciate it. It's always fun talking some baseball. So
yeah, I know you got a busy schedule, but this is kind of like a little starstruck moment, because we listen to you all the time. We've been listening to you for the past like 3 years. I know you've been doing it for like 5, but this is awesome, man.
Yeah, where were you for the first 2? No, I'm just kidding. Yeah. Yeah, no, I appreciate it. I'm just a dude who turned on a microphone one day and started talking, into it, and people listened occasionally.
People start listening.
Yeah. That's it, man. Like, you know. It's just fun, man. Have fun with it, and it's good. You guys definitely got to come out to some events. They're a blast, man. 205 gets pretty wild. So especially with the ALDS game, like the ALDS game was freaking awesome. We had 470 some people out there. It was a blast.
Yeah, that was the one that we saw you guys at.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, we went for the whole pregame and everything like that. But all of our friends had to get different tickets. I don't know. One of our friends had one already, so we just went to their section. But we'll for sure come to every event you guys have now.
We're going to go to a disgusting amount of games this year.
Yeah, we're in the Upper East Side, so we're like 10 minutes from the stadium. We just take the 4 straight there. So we literally have been sitting on the couch just watching the game, and like the second inning rolls around, we're like, "Yeah, you want to go?"
Because you can get very cheap tickets in the second.
After the game, like starts. $5. Well, on the game time app. But what we do is, the Yankees might not be too happy about this, but we get the monthly passes for the standing room, which is only like $80 for like the entire month. Well, depending on
some months, 60 for August or something.
Yeah, and some months it's like 100 because there's like 3 Red Sox games. But we get that for $80. So
it's for the whole month.
Yeah, whole month. a fucking steal. You get it for like $5.
They like send you. They send you the ticket day of.
Yeah, and you use just the MLB ticket app.
Oh, the
MLB.
QR. They send you the QR on the app. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, the stadium app. So we would get that, and we go to every game, and we would go in because obviously you get in the stadium with that. And then one of our friends one time had an old ticket against the Astros, and the guys obviously protecting the section, all they check for is the section number. Yeah, yeah. So he just went on Snapchat and went over the date and changed the date. So we just went into the bleachers. So after that, we can kind of get in the stadium and then go wherever we want, but don't tell the Yankees. But
yeah, no, it's I think the culture in the stadium has changed with when they added the standing room only stuff. Like the culture as far as like getting tickets and things like that, because it used to be you couldn't stand around and like there wasn't that that banister real estate where you could watch the game. Now with center field, like there's a big social aspect to going to a Yankee game too, where you can just drink and hang out and walk around and do whatever. It was because we had a whole bunch of playoff tickets too that I was getting rid of, and you could tell that a lot of people were doing that, and I had some tickets that I'm like, people are just waiting to the end to buy the standing room only, whatever, and they just go wherever it is. So it's different. It's different in the stadium, but it's good to the pinstripe pass is a good thing, I think, to get a lot more people in for sure.
Yeah, and the Yankees have done a great job with that too. Like they have created so many cool spaces around the stadium, and like it's almost better to go do that too. It's just such a cool experience.
Yeah, you have a sick view from the center field bar too.
Yeah,
you just have the bar right behind you, and then you're in center field just screaming at Brett Gardner. He never responds, but we always yell at him, and he's just all business, just looking straight. I mean, the guy's at work. I mean, I don't want somebody yelling at me while I'm at my cubicle, but we always say that too. We were in right field one time, and Mike Talkman was out there. We were going, Mike, 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 and we were like, why aren't you turning around? And he was just like, one time he did turn around, he looked pissed off, so we're like, all right, we'll let you work. But it is weird because the guy's at work, and I can't imagine somebody screaming at me behind on my computer.
I mean, you're not getting paid millions of dollars in your cubicle, probably.
No, I'm not.
And I bet if you were, you'd have no problem with people yelling at you.
Yeah, that's true.
Just ridiculing whatever I'm doing.
Yeah. Type faster, you dumb shit. If you're getting paid millions of dollars, someone can yell at you.
You'd be like, yeah, all right, fuck you, I will.
All right, man. So I'll let you go, but thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah, boys, it was fun. Definitely. We'll talk soon for sure.
Yeah, awesome. Right. Sounds good, man.
See you later.
And when it falls down, who you gonna call now? Come on, come on. And when it all falls down, man, I promise. I'm so self-conscious, that's why you always see me with at least one of my watches. Rollies and posses that drove me crazy. I can't even pronounce nothing past that for safety. Then I spent $400 on this, just to be like, nigga, you ain't up on this. And I can't even go to the grocery store without some ones that's clean and a shirt with a team. See, we live in the American dream. The people highest up got the lowest self-esteem. The prettiest people do the ugliest things. For the road to riches and diamond rings. We shy because they hate us, floss because they the greatest. We trying to buy back our 40 acres. And for that paper, look how low we are stoop. Even if you in a Benz, you still a nigga. In a coupe. Come on, come on. And when it falls down, who you gonna call now? Come on, come on. And when it all falls down, I say fuck the police, that's how I treat them. We buy our way out of jail, but we can't buy freedom. We'll buy a lot of clothes, but we don't really need them. Things we buy to cover up what's inside.